You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
But the more you know, the less you know, if that makes sense. And I think that it's really opened my eyes up, going deeper into the qualifications and deeper into my learning, how little you know about.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
You're now listening to the Coaches Network, podcast aiming to bring people at the heart of coach and player development together. My name is Coach Yas, a UEFA A licensed, FA Advanced Youth Award and FA Goalkeeper B licensed coach. With over 10 years of experience working in youth football from grassroots right through to Premier League academies, I'm currently operating as an affiliate tutor for the FA alongside working towards a Masters in Performance Football Coaching. Today I'm going to be joined by my co-host and the Coaches Network Analysis Specialist, Coach Ben. Ben is a UEFA A licensed coach who holds an FA Youth Award and a Masters in Sports Coaching, with 10 years of experience including working across the male and female youth development pathways, alongside a vast experience on individual, player and team performance analysis. And as part of our Insight series, we'll be joined by a range of individuals working across multiple disciplines within the coaching world in order to explore their journeys and dig deeper into their experiences, so that we can leave you with some golden nuggets to help you reach your full potential.
Welcome back to another episode of the Coaches Network, guys. My name is Coach Yas, and today I'm joined by my co-host as usual, Ben. How's it going, Ben?
All good. Ready for an insightful chat.
Brilliant. And today we've got a very special guest with us today. Prepare yourself for this, a bit of a mouthful. I've got James Barlow, currently working as Senior Academy Analyst at Portsmouth, as well as the Under-18s Assistant Coach. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Perfect. And he's also got an interesting additional role in his armoury, and that is currently working as a national pathway coach within the futsal pathway for the FA. Welcome, James. How are you?
I'm brilliant. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Good stuff. James, we're not going to waste any time. We're going to get right into the thick of it. Where did that journey begin and how did you get to where you got to now?
It's funny, really, because I never actually got into the love of coaching until probably about 16, 17, or even more football. So I suppose it all fueled from me going to Fratton Park with my dad at Portsmouth, 2002, watching them win the Division One. And ever since that, it sort of fueled a bit of a passion. But it sort of started from my first job. So my first job was working at a goals soccer centre. Now this just popped up, little five-a-side place, and I thought, oh, this would be a great first job. In there, obviously, you've got five-a-side leagues, you've got birthday parties, you've sometimes got Saturday morning coaching, and I was probably there every day of the week during the summer, just trying to earn a bit of money. And every Saturday, I'd be doing kids' parties. I might be doing three or four kids' parties a day on a Saturday or a Sunday. And through that sort of time, then I did my level one with one of my good friends. And absolutely loved it. And I thought, one of those things where I was out of my comfort zone. I enjoyed being around people anyway and just having a bit of a laugh. And I thought, yeah, I think this is a bit of me. I had some really good teachers at school, which sort of fueled a sort of love for developing in sport, really. And then from there, I went to university, went to Loughborough, which I did my level two, studied sports coaching as a BSc, did my youth awards up there. But during that sort of period of time, I then got involved with a bit of grassroots first in the women's game, working with a local Loughborough Foxes, a local team up there. Then I started getting involved with, I didn't really get to play up at the uni. I sort of made a decision of, should I go and try out and play for the uni, or should I just think, you know what, I put all my eggs in one basket and get a bit of coaching. And from there, I started to coach at the futsal club at the university. They were competing in the Super League at that time. But at the same time, I was coaching at the college, Loughborough College, as their first team coach. And I was probably about 19 then. And as that sort of developed, I did my B licence at 19 at St George's, when it was a pass and fail. And I tell you what, it was probably one of the scariest things I've ever done in that sort of period of time, just in terms of how it was quite cutthroat then. And I suppose you're going in and there was a black and white answer. It was, no, this is how you coach, this isn't how you coach. And that's developed over the last sort of 10 years. But I look at it and I think it was an incredible experience. So then from there, I did, as people do, you don't know what to do with your summer after uni. And I went over to America for 3 months with Challenger Sports. And I think during that period of time, that really threw me into an uncomfortable situation, living away 3 months without my family. Obviously, Loughborough-wise, I was away from my family anyway, but being able to be completely dependent on myself. Sometimes you rock up and you're coaching a two-year-old and it's just you and four two-year-olds and you think, oh my goodness, what should I do? And you end up doing kick the coach and they're chasing you for an hour. Or it could be you've got 15 half-decent players that you've got to really technically develop, and they've got a different ethos over there in terms of that really strong technical outcomes. And I think over that period of time that it allowed me to be really adaptive with, I suppose, pulling sessions out and having a go, getting it wrong and developing on that. And I think since that sort of 3 month period, that first year at uni and everything, I really caught the bug for it. And I then went and did my A license at 25. I was the head of the women's football team as a program lead at Loughborough. Was there for 3 years. And I think that sort of journey itself taught me loads in terms of being accountable for a program, having ownership. I think we had 95 girls in that program, having a staff team around 16, and just those various experiences itself. And I suppose beyond that as well, I've had several roles after that, but I think that's where it all really kicked off. And I think my learning as a coach has really fueled since developing more in the futsal pathway, but at the same time within, I suppose, completing my A license, and I think that's where it all started for me after that.
And just on there, you know, you're quite an interesting start to that bit here. You know, you talk there about the pass or fail in the terms of the B license, and obviously how things have obviously changed now. Just interested, what year did you take your A license?
So I was 25, so that is, what, 3 years ago?
Okay, so just after the, I guess, the pathway changed in terms of it.
Yes, being absolutely, more,
I guess a journey rather than an exam, shall we say?
Yes, yeah.
What were your thoughts in terms of that aspect of things? I mean, I went through a similar journey. Did my B license, old format, A license, new format. Around the same time, really. I think it was 2016. I did mine. What were your thoughts on that?
I think it was really beneficial for me, to be honest, because I was balancing the youth award at the same time. And I did mine at with the Loughborough Women's Programme. And it allowed me to really delve deeper with my tutor, who was Craig Hinton, into what I believed in and how I wanted to play. And it was very much centred around, we're in a top division within university. There was quite a lot of pressure in terms of maintaining that status. So And I think you get quite emotionally involved with the coaching because you want to improve and you want to get you want to make a really good impression. One, because you think that you've got a status with that sort of university, but at the same time yourself wanting to make an impression of how you are as a coach. But I think what taught me a lot is it wasn't all about the X and the O's, as we were talking before. It was a lot of it was getting to know the girls, what made them tick, getting to know the university, getting to know the league, getting to know the coaches that I was with, the staff that I was really fortunate to work with, and just what I could really bring to the table. And I think the journey itself allowed me to think beyond just what football, what 3-5-2, what 4-4-3 was, and understanding that how am I going to get the best out of these girls that are working to become sports scientists, lawyers, engineers, and understanding that there's a completely different context whilst during that time working within professional football at Burton Albion and at Boston United in the conference. And I think that I had three different experiences during that time in football that allowed me to, I suppose, pinch ideas, get things wrong. And that environment allowed me to really take ownership of what I believed was right and what I suppose I had to hold myself accountable if it went wrong. And I think that the A license itself allowed me to nurture that reflection.
Mm. Just, you know, just beyond that, then, you know, would you mind maybe just offering some insight and thoughts on those coaches who are maybe now going through the pathway now? And, you know, I've spoken to quite a few of the coaches in recent times where they maybe expressed some frustrations because they feel that maybe there's not as much emphasis, or at least from the from a tutor delivery perspective, around the technical elements of the course, and you know, seems to be much more focused around the other three corners in that respect. What are your thoughts on that, and what would your advice be to maybe coaches who have got that mindset around potentially how to develop that technical aspect a bit more?
Yeah, I think, look, especially during this period of time, there is a volume and a sheer volume of content around tactical, technical development. But I don't believe that that sort of things is a one-size-fits-all approach. I think you can tell the X and the O's all day, but I think that you have to challenge the character of the players that you're with, their decisions. But I suppose it's finding that process of supporting the player's decision. Now, sometimes it might be you need to, as a nine, shut off the line in between the five and the six. And there are non-negotiables that you'll find as a tactic that you like as such. But I suppose a lot of it will be, if depending on how you work, is the principles of what you'd like. Now, I personally, I did a lot of research around the game, about formations, about understanding different things, reading different books. And I think you get in a cycle of trying to know too much. And I think sometimes you've got to take a step back and go, well, actually, who am I coaching? What do they really need to know? And probably this is a bit too much for them, or even for me at the moment, because if they question me and go, well, why am I doing that? And you aren't able to give them the justification, the rationale, and just because you've seen someone play out from the back like it and you want to emulate that, I think that's a really difficult thing to do. But I think it's important to get wrong and have a go. But at the same time, I think it's really important to go, well, what do I need as a coach? What do players need? And create a bit of a journey between that, and understand that you might say to the players that I want to try this formation because I am learning at the moment. We're all learning. I'm trying this system, but these are the principles that I like. I really want high pressure. I want to play in between lines. I want to face forward in possession. And I think when you have those underlying principles, it probably doesn't matter what tactic you play. It's all about the sort of space you're understanding and the invasion game aspect to it. Denying one end, scoring in the other end, or however you like.
You know, I think that's a very good point that you made there. And yes, it's kind of brought up in sort of like previous podcasts that we had, that in terms of that sort of, you're sharing your journey with the players in terms of your development, that you're being open to them, that, okay, cool, I haven't tried this before, but like, let's have a go at it, sort of thing. Yeah. But you have that consistency there where, like, you know, there is general things you would expect regardless of what formation it is that you're playing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And also just about that whole sort of element of knowing your players, you have quite like a, you know, varied sort of experience whilst you're up at Loughborough. So you're doing Burton Albion's academy there, Boston United, and the women's game. Like, can you talk to us a bit about like the sort of differences that you experienced in those sort of different teams there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I needed something a little bit more during that period of time. I absolutely love the university system, but I think as a coach, I always crave that little bit more I suppose, what the real game is. And because that's where I want to be. I want to set my goals high, and I want to really try and challenge myself. Now, the period of time, I was quite lucky and fortunate where when I was working at Burton, I was fortunate to work with Adam Murray and Carl Hawley, who were working with the 15-16s with me at Burton. And during that time, Adam got the job at Boston United, to which I asked for an element of experience, which I was fortunate to get. And look, I think sometimes you have to take these opportunities. And that sort of 6 months for me during his time there before he went to another club was probably the biggest experience I've ever had in football. Was understanding what the changing room was like in a very performance-dominated environment, understanding what it looked like when it was their jobs, understanding the enjoyment they had from it and the camaraderie they had as players. And then the flip side of that is the development football within the under-12s and the under-15s and the players within the academy. And I went from Burton to Nottingham Forest. And between those two academies, it's brilliant to see. I think being around the development aspect of football, and I think what I learned from those three different things are very, very different experiences, but all very similar in different ways. So obviously with the Burton aspects, they were very clear with their philosophy of hardworking individuals, very purposeful with their work. And I think that was brilliant for their catchment area and the players that they had. Within the women's side of things, we were on a separate journey. They did it because it was their love. It was what they enjoyed. It was the community aspect of it. And then the Boston aspect, it was their job. It was what they used to pay their mortgage. And I think each and every one of those had responsibilities. Each and every one of those, you embrace certain qualities of yourself. So the under-12s, it allowed, or the under-15s, it allowed me to question more. It allowed me to find more guided discovery. It allowed me to, I suppose, have a variety with my coaching. With the girls, it was very much, I'm going to try and teach you a certain way of playing, and let's try and get it wrong together. But that, I suppose, that was me moulding my belief in how the game should be played. And then at Boston, I was very much facilitating what my views were. I was on set piece duty at times. I was on the touchline during match day when we got Salford away on a Tuesday night. And it's a different area of the game where suddenly if someone loses their man on a corner, it was so massive. And it really opened my eyes up to the responsibility that players have in games and the character needed to play the game at that level.
And just delving a bit deeper, like you've already kind of started to touch on in terms of like the differences of like in Boston and like with Loughborough Women, in terms of like, you know, Boston, they are playing to win, and like to win is the be all and end all, and like for some of them that win bonus is definitely needed to fund their living and whatnot. But in particularly with the coaching, did you see yourself communicating in like different ways with like female players in comparison to the male players? Because I've had experiences of both as well, and I felt like it is different. Not that it's necessarily a good different or bad different, but it is different in the way that you generally communicate with them.
Yeah, and I think it's about that connection. I would have different relationships with the female players in the way that I may have, because I had the contact time with them. I may have sit down one-to-ones with them, have a coffee with them and discuss how their degree is. And I suppose get to know the wider aspects. So the coaching was probably done quite a lot off the pitch in the women's game. And I suppose just sheerly down to the volume of contact time that I had at Boston, which was, I suppose, two nights a week. It was very different, really. It was, this is your role, complete your role. But you had that responsibility, and then you get to know the really big characters and the groups. And I just think at times that there's no different way that I communicated. It was just, I suppose, the message may have been different because of the level and the difference within the game. But in terms of, I was a lead coach at Loughborough, and I was assistant coach at Boston. So I think in terms of other aspects, I probably communicate in a very similar way, in the way that I would speak quite one-to-one with a lot of players, because my message was quite small at the Boston aspect, and it was the best way to communicate within the Loughborough aspect. And but I think one of the things that really challenged my coaching was within the futsal aspect of trying to see the game under a different microscope, really, in terms of, and I think that probably made me a better coach, is seeing it such a condensed form of the game, 5v5, watching it so far, so emotional, and really trying to distinguish the tactics and the techniques. And I think that really helped me with, I suppose, the way that I communicated within those two different formats.
I think that's a good point that you're making there as well, in terms of futsal. Me and Yas were fortunate enough we're still amateurs in it, but we're fortunate enough to do our futsal level one like years ago. And like even from that, we kind of saw like the minor sort of differences, and like, you know, a lot of people like to differentiate futsal from football a lot, but then when you really break the game down, there's a lot of small games happening in the big game. And like, you know, there's situations where there's like small overloads, and that's essentially like even smaller version of futsal that's going on there. So like, how have you seen it kind of help when you are like coaching in terms of the 11-a-side game in regards to like the sort of technical and tactical aspects of it?
So I think it's a great question. I think it probably allowed, because the game is so quick in futsal, you probably have a lot of your coaching is off the court. So I wouldn't be able to say orders onto the court at all, because as soon as I want to say what I want, and it's already processed in my mind that there's already three different moments that have occurred straight after. Mm. So I think and especially when you have timeouts in futsal, you've got 1 minute under a pressured environment to make a specific amount of feedback, and it can't just be babble. It has to be specific and honest. And I think what it's allowed me to do is understand the different demands of the game more. So players don't want to make mistakes. They don't purposely go out on the pitch to go, I'm going to go and do this wrong. And I think it's being able to probably step back from the game and allow us to notice more as coaches. So how we support their decisions as players is really, really important for us, because we've got to give responsibility to the players to make decisions in futsal because of it being so quick. So I think that I've got some friends, thankfully, from Loughborough, who have got some really, really good academic knowledge about perception and understanding of different stresses and affordances within skill acquisition. And being able to understand like the game state, the speed of the pressure itself, how to read pressure, specific angles of how you receive the ball, how you support your friend, what the main emotional states that players go into. I think when you break those down, a lot of the time in football, and it was a really big thing that I used to do, is just coach during. But I think what futsal has allowed me to do is coach more in the before and after phase. And I spoke about lows at the moment, but it's something I really try to challenge myself within, is people are messing up on their receiving skills, but it might be because in the previous before phase, they haven't moved or orientated their position of their body enough to create a position to receive, to play forward, or they're not facing forward in it. So, and then understanding, well, if I then drop into this space, does the defender follow me? Or if they do, then I actually have created this disguise for the player on the ball to just play through the lines. Or if he doesn't, because he's still protecting centrally because he's compact, then I'm open. And I think it's that scenario-based coaching that has really allowed me to probably change how I question. So the perceptional side of questioning and creating a framework around that of what do you think is most important in that moment? What have you noticed? What do you see? What do you feel? What is now affecting your decision making as a pair, as an individual, as a three? And I think what futsal allows you to do is there's a big thing about coaching in pairs, and anything in the game is a paired or a third man connection. Anything more than that is an influence, really. So I think when you strip that back down, it's in football, how do people support one another? Are people connected through eye contact? Are people connected through their distance? But at the same time, then being able to really, dilute the or strip it down the technical detail to then bring it back up for their decision making.
Mm. No, I think that's a very good point that you're making there, because it feels like you know, coaches are always rushing to the bigger picture of like the tactical aspects of the game, but then some players aren't even able to execute like the sort of technique correctly. Mm. So like it's all good you talking about like how you want them spaced out and all this, but if the player is struggling with the basic receiving or doesn't know how to, it kind of falls on us a bit to take responsibility of that. I just wanted to go back now to your timeline. So currently now, fast forwarding, you're now the assistant PDP coach at Portsmouth, as well as the academy senior academy analyst there, and you're doing the performance analyst job for the England futsal team as well, the under-19s. What does your role now entail day to day? How are you balancing it all out?
Well, obviously, so the role that I've just got was thankfully just before lockdown. Now, during that period of time, obviously, there's been very minimal football. So I think at the moment it's almost planning into the return to play for next season. Now that what I would like to try and involve in the role is that integration of performance analysis with the coaching. So when we're on camp, sometimes with the futsal, it might be we've got a session on our possession. We might show a video of how we defend within as a high press. So 2 minutes of clips of that. Bang! This is our examples. And then we go and train on it. And then it's being filmed, and you might clip the training during that. And I think that integration during the process of coaching, planning, reviewing, and all of that is really key. And it allows the players to reflect in action and post-event. And I think it's something I would like to bring into Portsmouth, but at the same time, really challenging myself in utilising the technology, bringing players into more of a... being accountable for their own individual clips, their own learning of themselves, because there's so much information that they can get provided now. I think it's they've got an opinion, and I think it's really important to understand their opinion of the game, because when they're going to go into a senior changing room, it's not necessarily go, here's everything I know. It's, well, can you do this role? Do you understand this role? Can you contribute and do this role for the team? And the more they reflect upon themselves and their niche and their quality as players, and developing that sort of technical and understanding, but being accountable for their decisions. So at times they will get loads of clips themselves, but sometimes they just sit on a computer and they're underutilized. And I think I really want to make sure that what we do is streamlined and utilized. So we film it, we review it, we train. Then when they come back, they might go, oh, can I just have a little look at my the set pieces from the weekend? Brilliant, no problem. Then you sit. Then what they really want to do next year is that more one-to-one, and that introduction of SEP next year for performance professional clubs, sorry, with their education is really important. So when they finish their apprenticeship, they'll understand their role more, their clarity. So if they're a centre-half, they're a forward, they'll know exactly why and what is required of them as a within that position. So that sort of that holistic piece of can you do more as individuals, because it's not just me trying to educate you, you've got to try and educate yourself, but bring me into that and bring me as and let's have that conversation. So I think the role in itself is developing. I think the role of analysis and the use of video and everything is forever growing within football, and I think it's really exciting to bring that in part of the coaching. And also just being part and supporting the brilliant work that's already happening, really.
No, I think that's actually a good way of going forward, because like from my little experiences in academy, like I feel like analysis isn't used as effective as it really should be. And you kind of brought it up in terms of like, yeah, from the technical and tactical aspects of it, it helps a lot with the players in terms of like the way they're viewing the game and kind of like opening their eyes up a bit more to the bigger picture of it. But also from like a psychological perspective, when that player feels like they are underperforming, you show them like the highlights of their performances. It does remind them of why they are there. sort of thing. So absolutely. It's really effective 100%. Tool. A really effective
and it,
tool.
And I think it's really important to see what they see. So we're standing on the side of the pitch, or I've got a lovely gantry that I can watch over and an aerial view, but we won't necessarily know what they feel and see in that time. And of course, we want to challenge that because we expect really exceptional attributes of those players at times, because they go into a really tough world of being a professional footballer. You've got to be something really special. And it's not always, sometimes it can just be about how they read the game, what they see. They won't always be the best technically gifted player. And I think that attribute of embracing what they really are bringing to the table, but at the same time, then understanding, taking a step back and reviewing and being quite critical and critiquing their own performances to be better in what they do.
I think just something that you touched on there, James, about, you know, them reviewing and being critical about their own performances. Mm. I think that's a large piece that maybe a lot of coaches maybe often, I guess, overlook or just completely, you know, don't really see the value in. A lot of coaches, you know, we have this whole thing, especially right now, everyone's talking about things being player-led and player-centred and whatnot. And obviously, I think within that, it's important to highlight there's a major difference.
Yeah.
Obviously, for some, first and foremost, I think when it is player-centred, there's nothing wrong with the coach taking that initiative. And I personally don't believe the players always need to take the initiative and take the first steps towards, I guess, their own development, as long as there's an understanding of what the, I guess, the process that's being followed in that moment in time is trying to achieve. Just kind of to build on that then, what would you say are some key things that maybe you've observed and you've, I guess, come across in helping players develop that self-awareness?
Yeah, I think the self-awareness piece in itself is such a big book to try and understand. Yeah. I think it's something that I'm trying to really understand more. I think firstly, it's detracting their emotion. So it's rational thinking. I think a lot of the times there's pressure on them. And I think sometimes being in that pressured environment, being us noticing what they do is key. But I think it is important for them to review the good things, but sometimes when it goes wrong, they need to be accountable for it. And being able to be part of that journey where it can't just be a straight linear line. It's going to have its ups. It's going to have its downs. There's going to be days where they're really struggling with the game and they're going to struggle getting up and down the pitch. They're going to struggle with their first touch. And I think those are the days where they need to probably review. It's the environment that you set as well. Now, what we don't want to do is create fear. We want them to make mistakes. And I think the more they make, the better their longevity of their experience and their sustainability of their character will perform. They need to have those bad games to know what it feels like. But they also need to have those jubilation moments where they go, I was brilliant today. And I think it can't all be middle ground. It has to have an up and a down. And I think there's that photo where sometimes it's, What does the end result look like? Is it a nice straight line to the end flag, or is it ups and downs? You're going over a lake of crocodiles, you're going over a mountain, and that's probably what it is. But I think what we all need to probably do in our coaching is listen and question. So they want to impress all the time, but they're, especially in the youth development phase and in the PDP phase, they're going through such a tough physical time in their development and going through such bodily changes, going through being top of the school to bottom of the school to then top of the school to then becoming almost your full-time job at 16, being a scholar. And it's a really, really tough time. But at the same time, understanding that it is an incredible, incredible job that they have and an incredible opportunity in what they do. And the harder they work at it, the more they challenge one another, the more they challenge themselves, the rewards will come. And you can't say that for everyone, and success will look very different. And I think if they're critical and they're reviewing all those things, you're creating skills that will help them in life, regardless of football, wherever they go, whether they go to university, whether they work in, whether they go in non-league, whether they go into futsal at times, whether they go into business. And I think the qualities that they get from the experiences that they find will put them in really good stead.
Definitely. You touched on there about, you know, developing essentially as them as people rather than just players in that respect. It's just interesting to know, you know, obviously through your journey now, if you've had any major influences that maybe helped you develop as a person and maybe what some of the biggest lessons you've taken from them are.
Yeah, I've been really, really lucky to work with some outstanding coaches, and I think it'd be very similar to a lot of people, but my family have been incredibly supportive of me. Living away for, I was away for 8 years, trying to be dependable on it. And I think that I've got two separate journeys going off in one. I've got the futsal side and I've got the football side, and I've got people in those areas that have really influenced me. So I've been really fortunate to work under a lot of the England coaches. I worked under Mike Sugavala, worked with Mark Forrest. I worked with many, many different coaches within those areas, and Sean Kitson. And I think those people themselves in futsal have really challenged my thinking. And I think we've got a really good ethos where we're not afraid to get it wrong with each other, but someone brings something to the table. When you question them why, it's not because we're going, well, we're not sure of that. It's because we're really curious and we want to develop. We want to be part of the journey. And I think within the football side of things, the academies I've worked under have been absolutely outstanding for me and my personal development. And more recently at Forest, working with Dan Bale, Don Gethfield, Jody Caldwell and Gary Brazil, I think a lot of the time what I've taken from them is it's okay to not know everything. I think when you go through all your licenses and all the qualifications, and you sit there and you watch people and you take so many notes, and people will be like that during lockdown at the moment. I'm still doing it. Is you're trying to create every bit of, get all those golden nuggets, put it together, and then try and understand and put it in your own context. And I think then it's going, well, what is my niche as a coach and what can I bring to the table? During those times, everyone's given me an opportunity to have ownership and responsibility and being accountable for what I do. And I think that's probably taught me so much. And I've had more things go wrong in that sort of time than I have done gone right. And I think that you have to be in environments that you're comfortable with getting things wrong. And one of the biggest environments that I was with and people that really helped me was a guy called John Harper, who is the translator for the England deaf squads. I was fortunate to be the under 21s deaf futsal head coach for about a season and a bit. And that was a very accelerated learning opportunity for me, coaching through a translator, making sure my message and my clarity was consistent and simple. And I think that sort of period of time, from such a complex game, trying to simplify it to a matter of a tweet, if you like, 150 characters was really, really tough. And having those one-to-one conversations with those coaches and coaches that I'm currently working with as well have been really, really beneficial. And I think over the last sort of 9-10 years of coaching, I've still got bundles and loads to learn. And I think it's still trying to understand what works for me. But I think I'm nearly getting there, I think. But I think it's still take ownership, take responsibility, learn and just get it wrong. But allow the players to be part of that and create an environment that is fun and enjoyable.
Mm. Just on that then, you know, you talk there about creating that environment, but that is fun and enjoyable. And that being, I guess, you know, essentially it's some element of your philosophy. How would you describe the coaching philosophy? Because I mean, you've had a bit of experience across the different disciplines in terms of, you know, working as an analyst, working obviously as a football coach, and obviously having that experience working in the futsal domain. How would you say those things have shaped, and what would you say those things have shaped your philosophy into?
Yeah, I think when I was at Nottingham Uni last year, that really challenged me. We're trying to create a culture. But I think what I really wanted to show is, I suppose, a big part of my philosophy is just that relationship aspect, that connection that you have with people. I'm very open. I'm very honest. I like to try and find solutions as a group. I'm very open in the aspect. I'm not going to have all the answers, but I'll really try hard to try and find the answer. And if I don't, then try and find it with me. So I'm willing to put myself out of my comfort zone and expose myself. But I think, and I'm happy to be accountable. But I think the biggest thing for me is when I leave somewhere, or when I left Nottingham, I wanted to leave somewhere that people really enjoyed the journey that they were on, and people really enjoyed being part of something. And I think that, I wouldn't say that's necessarily philosophy, but happy people making better and happy players normally get the best out of them. Now, I'm really, really conscious about those sort of things. And if you don't enjoy what you do, you're probably not going to do very well at it at times. I think sometimes when you're going through development football or performance football, you can lose sight of that sometimes. And I think trying to still keep that fire burning, that hunger and that pure love for the game is really, really important for me.
Definitely. And, you know, just touching on there, you know, those are some of the, I guess, important factors for you. I just got out of curiosity now, you know, if over your time working across the different disciplines, if there's been any things that you would maybe try and avoid and maybe try and steer away from in that respect. Obviously, you know, a large part of what you said there is linking in with the players, having that connection with the players, and, you know, certainly you touched on it earlier as well, even when you're working with the women's side, taking some time out to get to know the players on a deeper level. And I think it can often go overlooked at times as that, in terms of how important that connection can be, in terms of just building that trust with the players. And sometimes just having that trust and that, I think being vulnerable with them can take you a long way as well. I'd just be curious to know, you know, moving on a little bit, as if you had any specific things that help keep you inspired and motivated to keep, I guess, pushing and striving to become better at what you do. I'll be assuming it, and I'm not going to be far off that, you know, your passion for the game is obviously one of those things. But obviously, coaching can be a quite rewarding job, or however you wish to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else would you say will keep you inspired and motivated?
It's a great question, because I think I speak to my friends about it all the time. They love football. They always ask me about it, and they think, "Oh my God, you've got such an amazing job." And I think they don't know the half of it. But I think
tell them to do a wet Tuesday night session.
Absolutely. And I think what keeps me inspired and motivated is, again, it is that I love what I do. I think that as a job, you seeing what you can get out of people, seeing what you can challenge yourself, and sometimes you take a step back and go, "Wow, that was pretty special," or that was, and again, as Ben said, it could be a Tuesday night where you're just getting absolutely hammered on with rain, and sometimes you get that last minute winner, and it's just all your worries have gone. I think that just the pure emotion of it is really exciting. But I think it's being part of something, being part of a journey, and having a purpose within what you do, and then people. I suppose what's exciting for me is having those conversations in maybe 20, 30 years' time, we're going, who made that impact on your coaching or your playing career? And I would love for one player out of hundreds that I may have coached to say what I could have helped them with, whether that is imparting the tiniest little thing, putting a smile on their face, whatever it may be. And I think what motivates me is you don't know what could be, and it's sky's the limit almost with coaching. But also, I think it's sometimes, and I was in education for about 6 years teaching, and what really got me through some of that sometimes is, and I love the teaching, the connection you have with the players, but sometimes afterwards I'd finish teaching and go, "Oh, I'm coaching tonight, I can't wait," or I want to try something new, this is really exciting. And I think what excites me at the moment is obviously coaching and being part of a club that I've supported since probably the age of five. Seeing them in the Europa League, seeing them with, well, a team that I absolutely loved, seeing them win Division One and being through the emotions of it. And I suppose it's quite exciting. But I'd say probably the coaching journey within professional football is very, very limited for me yet. So far, I've only really been in academy football for 5 years, and I think in the grand scheme of things, I'm so young within coaching. So I think that what excites me is going away to those tours, potentially with England, trying to win something, trying to be part of something, trying to develop players with those different experiences, trying to be part of developing a culture, developing a framework of playing, and just being around the pitch, really, I don't think there's a better feeling than seeing that pitch with a little bit of dew on top of it, ready to see a little sidewinder hit the back of the net.
Kind of leading on from that, you know, what would you say are some of the biggest bugbears that you might have within coaching? You know, I mean, we've all got them. Sometimes we see them and we see certain things, you know, they almost make us cringe a little bit when we do see them. You know, what would those things be for you?
I think it's a really good question. When I saw that in preparation for, I thought, oh my Lord, what do I say? And I think I thought about me. I thought about me first, and I thought probably my biggest bugbear with coaching is, and I've done it loads, is thinking that you know, but the more you know, the less you know, if that makes sense. And I think that it's really opened my eyes up going deeper into the qualifications and deeper into my learning, how little you know about cognitive development, child development, maturity, the tactics of the game, and how complex, but yet how simple the game really is. And I think one of the biggest bugbears for me is the classic quote of listening to reply, but not listening to understand. And taking that moment where sometimes you need to listen to what people are saying. I had a really good CPD a couple of years ago of an international negotiator teaching us the art of listening effectively, paraphrasing what people say, using questions based on what people were talking about. And I think that over the last couple of years has really, really zoned in on me, because I think when you're in a room of coaches, obviously, and I've done it loads, and you go, oh, I can't wait to say this because I want to show what I know. But a lot of the time it's don't show what you need to know. It be part of the conversation, but understand what people are saying, digest it, feel it, and go, well, actually, yeah, I've had this, or no, I'm going to challenge that a little bit because this is my understanding. And I think that would probably be my biggest bugbear.
And you've already started to kind of touch on all three of the conversation, like, you know, spending 8 years and thankfully you're back. But like, what would you say has kind of been like your biggest challenge of your coaching journey, and how have you been able to deal with it?
I think my biggest challenge was trying to fit everything in. Obviously, within the roles that you may have, you're still trying, I suppose, to earn a wage. But you're trying to get that invaluable education all the time. You're trying to be that potentially one step ahead of others that you perceptionally think. So there was times where I was teaching, I was then tutoring in the evening, I then had a camp in the weekend, I was at Forest and I was coaching 6 days a week, a game on a Saturday, game on a Sunday, bang, straight in the next week, teaching during the day. And I think it's that you get in such a cycle of everything that you forget probably about yourself at times and having that personal life. Thankfully, I've got very supportive relationship and family. And I think it's that period of time where when it stops, it really does stop. And you think, oh my, it's hit me like a train. And I think that period of time where you think that it's the right thing to do is just keep going. But you probably don't get to stop and review and reflect upon everything as best as you can. But yeah, trying to fit everything in, it was really, really tough. But do I regret it? No, I don't. Absolutely not. I think it just became a way of life for me. But at the same time, because of the love that I had with all of it, it was brilliant. as mad as it may sound.
And, you know, we're now kind of winding down now on this conversation. And just when you started at the age of, was it 17, 16?
Yeah.
So basically yesterday. If you're able to turn time back now and talk to yourself when you first got into coaching, what would you tell a young James Barlow?
I think it's a brilliant question, and I think it's be more self-aware, get it wrong, and when it is wrong, accept that it's wrong, or understand the feedback because people are trying to help you. Be around as many people as you can to understand, but sometimes don't always crave that feedback. Like, review it yourself first, because I think we've all been guilty, or I definitely have, of doing something and wanted immediate feedback. And I think that self-awareness piece is such a fine soft skill that I'm really only touching the surface for now. And I think if I was to understand that at the age when I was 16, 17, I think it would have been extremely beneficial for me.
Definitely. And I think, you know, just touching, you know, building on that, you know, it'll be interesting to know, having gone back to that point, you know, age 16, 17, giving yourself that message, fast forward to now, you know, having the experience of being an analyst, having an experience of now work, or limited experience now working in the PDP phase as a coach. Obviously, you know, lockdown's kind of just really taken that away from me at this moment in time a little bit. And obviously having the futsal experience and, you know, the range of other experience in terms of your teaching, your lecturing stuff. I'd be very interested to know now what you would see next for James Barlow.
I think next for me, it's putting my feet firmly on the ground and not looking at what's next, almost thinking this is now a period for me where I can gain a really strong level of continuity and consistency in a workplace. One that I love and one that I want to thrive and be challenged in. And I think for me, having that vast period of time up in the Midlands, but there was a lot of workplaces in a lot of period of times. And I think for me now, I just want to put my feet firmly on the ground, work hard within what I do, and just contribute with a view of longevity and sustainability.
Yeah. And, you know, so you kind of building on that then, it'll be interesting, though, if you now had to fast forward, you know, however many years, and I wish you had the longest career possible. At the end of your career, what would you want your legacy to be?
Oh, what a great question. Well, as you say about the career aspects, I think it's have the best time possible within the short period of time that you may have within the game. And what I mean by that is you think 20 years is a career, 30 years, but it's not a long period of time, really. I want to look back and think I've had a great time in football. But at the same time, embracing and enjoying the chaos of the game, however emotional, however erratic it is really looking back and thinking that I've developed some exceptional talent, I've exceptional players, exceptional people, and think, but I've had a really good time during it. And I think, sky's the limit with it, really. And I'm really not sure how else to answer that question, because I think legacy-wise, I don't think it's me to dictate that. I'd like to think that you let your work do the noise, almost. And if you have a legacy, amazing. If you don't, then I suppose it's part of the parcel, and that's not a problem at all. It might just have an influence on one person, and that could be quite fulfilling.
Definitely. You know, just as we start to wind down there, then I'm wondering, if we had seconds now for you to package away a golden nugget for our listeners, what would that be?
I think understand the game for what it is in a really simplistic way. It's so complex, but embrace it. As I said, the chaos of it. Believe in what you do, but provide clarity for your players as best as possible. Their role, the detail that they may provide. So you want to create the best players possible within the best technical aspects, but you want to stretch their intelligence. And I think the more you allow the players to be part of that process and fuel their behaviours during that time, I think that the more success that you could potentially have. But probably for me, understand how other sports work, how other platforms work, how other people work, and make sense of it yourself.
Definitely, yeah, some good bits there. I mean, I think in terms of just kind of touching on your experiences, I think, you know, it's very interesting to know that after all the different experiences, you still want to go out and get some more in terms of the different pathways within the game. And I wish you all the best in terms of your new role.
Thank you.
As the under 18 assistant at Portsmouth.
Of course.
Hopefully, you know, maybe we can have a part two one day, and we're sitting here. You might be the first team manager one day. Who knows? a bit of a journeyman so far. But, you know, fair play to you, mate. You seem to be doing really well with that. Well, there you have it, guys. It's been another fantastic. Some brilliant insights, plenty of golden nuggets for everyone to take away and apply. James, you know, he's shared a bit of insight across different disciplines within the game. You know, it's been quite interesting for me and Ben to kind of listen in on as well. But I just want to say thanks again for tuning in, guys. As usual, I've been joined by my co-host, Ben, but a very special thanks to our guest, James Barlow. Thanks again, James.
Thank you very much for having me.
Do get in touch. Let us know your thoughts and what your key takeaways were from today. And on that note, James, I'm not sure if you've got anywhere in particular that you could, I guess, be contacted by the listeners if they wanted to.
Yeah, so if you wanted to contact me on Twitter, I'm more than happy for that. So that's at JamesBarlow77. More than happy to take any questions or messages.
Brilliant.
Thank you for listening.
Definitely.
Thank you
for your time again, James. But and on that note, guys, if you wanted to get in touch with myself, I'm Coach Yass. You can find me on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Ben?
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at FocusBXX.
Guys, make sure you get in touch. Let us know your thoughts on today's episode, your key takeaways. And also, we'll be very intrigued to know where you're listening in from. Over the last few weeks in particular, our listenership has grown globally. We're now present in over 20 different countries. So do let us know where you're listening from. Please do not forget to hashtag The Coaches Network. Make sure you like, comment, follow, share with everyone, your colleagues, your players, your family members, your analysts, your futsal coaches. Mm-hmm. let them know. But guys, keep an eye out for our social media for the latest updates and announcements on upcoming guests and discussion topics with the panel. And if you've got any guests that you'd like to hear on the show or any topics you'd like to hear discussed, please do let us know on that note as well. But until next time, guys, thanks again for our guest, James Barlow.
Thank you. Perfect.
James, what I'm going to do, first of all, thank you very much for your time. What we'll do is we'll put it together. I'll send something across to you in the next few days. Have a listen back to it. And just remember, just one final note, you have met Ben before, so just remember how big he is. So, if we don't hear back from you, then we'll take that as you're happy.
Portsmouth is near.
just one additional thing there as well, James. I'm not sure if you have anyone that you think may be worth, I guess, sort of pursuing for us as a guest. But if you do, we'll be more than happy to kind of, I guess, be connected to anyone that you feel might be of use or might be of, I guess, interest to the platform, essentially.
Yeah, sure.
But again, thank you again for your time. We'll definitely be in touch over the next few days.
Thank you, James.
Again, good luck on your new role and hopefully you get back into the environment as soon as possible.
Thank you. Well, hopefully that was all right for you.
No, it's good.
And I appreciate your time also. It's nice to just chat sometimes, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah, for real.
100%.
Yeah, we haven't done enough of it in this time anyway.
There's been loads of discussions that need to be had, and I think the fact that we've been able to kind of do this during this time has been almost a blessing in disguise, because a lot of people have been struggling. Yeah, 100%, man. For me personally, I mean, how many episodes have we recorded now, Ben? We're close to maybe 45 episodes in the last 4 weeks.
Something like that. Yeah.
So long may it continue, and like I said, one day we might get you on a part two with as a first team manager.
Getting Portsmouth got promoted,
and one can only hope, mate.
All the way back to the Premier League. Okay, look, thanks again, James. Take care, mate.
And we'll cheers, James.
Cheers, boys. Thank you.
Nice one, James. In a bit.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another edition of the Coaches Network Insight Series, where we sit down with experienced individuals across the multiple disciplines within the coaching world, hoping to explore their journeys and key insights in order to package away some golden nuggets that you can apply to help you reach your full potential. I've no doubt that you've enjoyed today's episode as much as we have, but I just want to say thanks again for tuning in. The support is much appreciated. Please do get in touch with us and today's guests. Let us know where you're listening from to share your thoughts, views and key takeaways from today's show, along with any suggestions you may have for guests or future topics on the show that you'd like to hear discussed. Ultimately, guys, the show is about yourselves. The content is for you, and we just want to continue to create that great content. On that note, get in touch with us on Instagram at The Coaches Network and on Twitter at The Coaches Net. And if you want to touch base with Coach Ben, he's available on Instagram and Twitter at FocusBXN. Lastly, guys, keep an eye on our socials for the latest updates and announcements for upcoming guests and discussion topics with the panel. And until next time, guys, take care.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.